What do you think about the size?
Well, I need my reading glasses, which I left down in the car, but it looks like a good size. It's basically a smartphone. It's a computer.
Oh. But it has trackers.
It does your fitness and it, you know, like how many miles you've walked. It checks your beats per minute. Like basically, you're kind of like getting hooked up to the beep machine mm-hmm. at a hospital. And I think the newer versions might do glucometer as well. Which is pretty amazing.
That's in a couple of years.
Yeah, a couple of years.
This one specifically, we got lost hiking. So I'm going to learn how to use this and add waypoints so we do not get lost hiking, because that's a very expensive plane ticket.
Yes.
Or foot surgery, depending on how lost you get.
Yeah.
We have to make our way through a river based off intuition that we're close enough to the floor. And we broke through a bunch of
ground level, yeah.
Because we thought we were late, because that was our first port of call. And we haven't been cruising.
And ship time moves around, and local is different from local time. But we made it and didn't end up like on
we actually
cliff.
Like a couple hours early.
Yeah.
But then when we were walking, we were like seeing these giant cliffs, and we were like, wow, we're glad we didn't exit near there, because otherwise we'd have to walk all the way back up the mountain. Well, I don't know if it was a mountain, but it was a steep incline through all these trees.
Oh, speaking of you liking to talk and being and having so many stories, I remember at some point, I can't remember if it was you or Roger, said that you worked with Aaron Copland.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who's that?
He's a famous composer. I mean, Matt can tell you a lot more, but let's just say
father of American music, as a matter of fact. All the music that you hear in, he invented music for Western movies.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so all the Westerns that you listen to that have this Western style music in the background, that's sort of what Copland invented for it. And that was after trying several things for it, because sometimes at the beginning people would laugh at the wrong point because the music didn't appropriate for what was going on.
It sounded like a clown rodeo as opposed to
anyway.
So
he was a very interesting man. He was not very attractive looking, mm-hmm. but he had
a nice dick.
Well, I don't know about that. But he must have, because he had absolutely gorgeous boyfriends. Well, they were star fuckers, you know.
It works.
Wanting to attach
themselves
to someone famous. And I guess you could say for American composers, there was no one more famous than he was at the time.
Yeah. Gershwin, maybe?
Oh, well, a different genre.
Yeah.
You know. I think there's the story. I'm not sure who the... no, it's another composer.
So you worked with him or were friends with him?
He came, I guess you would say, in the... God, it would have been in the 60s at some point. He was hired to spend 2 weeks at the University of Texas. And at the time, it cost them $20,000 a week.
That sounds like an exorbitant, outrageous amount of money.
Well, it was. I mean, it was like 2 yearly salaries at the time. And obviously, that's why it came for it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a problem. University of Texas was just...
U of T.
Yeah, the other U of T. He told someone U of T when he was on the cruise, and they're like, oh, University of Texas?
I thought it sounded Canadian.
You didn't have the U of T, y'all.
So he came to University of Texas because they made him an offer he couldn't refuse.
I was studying one of his pieces, and they call the Copland Variations. And what was interesting was that there were mistakes, note mistakes in mm-hmm. the edition, and I found them, but had to ask, I mean, are these mistakes, or is this what you mm-hmm. really wanted here? And he said, oh no, they're mistakes. And he said, I've been trying to get the editors to change the music for years and years now.
I've had that happen where some like simple Bach, well, simple-ish Bach mm-hmm. pieces, you know, he gets into some of the crunchier bits and it's like, I don't think he meant to be flat there. I think some copyist made it to liberty. So it's those kind of like...
Yeah, they're just editor's mistakes.
Yeah.
And I was playing... Oh, I can't even remember what I was playing. I'm sometimes asked to play at the beginning of like annual general meetings here in the building. Mm-hmm. And when I'm asked, I always say, yes, I'll be glad to do it. And so I picked out something to play, and it had mistakes in the copy. Mm-hmm. And but the problem with mistakes in the copy is you have to remember where they are. If you don't change them, and it was in a library copy.
Oh, so you couldn't pencil or pen all over it?
No, I didn't want to pencil or pen the name. And but I made it through. Mm-hmm. But as I said, the hard thing was remembering where the mistakes were.
Yeah. So, was your work with Copland like? Did you do more than just mention to him some of these mistakes? Or did you like pal around with him? Did you work with him?
No, I worked with him for a while. He, of course, lived in, I can't remember what the section. It was off of Manhattan. He lived in...
New York somewhere?
Yeah, New York City, but in one of the burbs.
Brooklyn, Bronx...
Queens. Yeah.
Oh, I'm surprised I got that one.
Well, I'm surprised I remember. It's been so long.
Yeah, indeed.
And so I used to go to his house for lessons.
Oh, so you took lessons from him?
Yes.
And, wow.
Because we liked each other, mm-hmm. and met at, as I said, at the University of Texas, and he was just a dole of fun to be around. I mean, he had a very quick and fast sense of humor, and of course, as we all know, I like a good laugh, as anyone else does.
As we well know. Now, did you, I mean, this is the 60s, right?
Yeah.
Not exactly the best era for,
oh, boy,
for gay liberation and LGBT pride and...
We never talked about any of that.
So that was just, you kind of, was it a tacit thing? Like it was just an open secret? You didn't ask about his boyfriends? He didn't ask about your...
No. And, that was a good era for me.
your dance card was full?
My dance card was not only full, but he was super, super rich.
Oh.
And, I mean, a millionaire. Many times over, and he used to take me around New York City to show me off in front of his supposedly wanting to be boyfriends that weren't interested in him.
Oh.
And they were quite wrong. I mean, he, besides being wonderful in bed, he was also generous with the money because he had lots of money. So.
That's where, is that where you got your, you know, you have simple tastes, you only want the best of everything?
Well, he bought me a overcoat, which I wore for years, and I can't, what's the really nice weave of men's
like
overcoats?
Burberry?
Not Burberry, but...
Like a Macintosh?
No.
Herringbone?
Not the design, it was the material.
Oh, okay.
And... is a very soft and comfortable weave of wool.
Oh, like cashmere?
Cashmere.
Ah, yes, right. Yes. That would
and
be...
He bought me a cashmere overcoat, which, of course, was, you know, way out of my budget.
But you rocked it, I'm sure.
Well, I was living in New York, and it was cold. Mm-hmm. You know, this little southern boy from, you know, going from Austin, Texas on the bus 2 days later or 3 days later
from
in
a long
New York City.
From
yeah.
a long, tall glass of water to an icicle?
Yes. Anyway...
So you took lessons from him, and then you just sort of parted ways? Like, did you keep in touch with him over the years?
Well, to begin with, he was already in his 80s when I met him.
Oh, okay.
And he died in, I believe, 1990.
Okay.
And we kept in touch for a while, but he was not a big letter writer, and he was busy.
Mm-hmm.
And... his main interest was to make sure that he was one of the first American composers to die as a millionaire. And he was.
Well, wow. that's a noble effort in and of
yes.
itself. You know.
And guess who he left his money to? Pardon?
Partner?
No, his money.
Oh, yeah, his partner.
No.
No.
He left his money to his two servants.
Oh.
You didn't have a partner at the time?
No, I don't think he had a boyfriend.
So he didn't like make an... Did he give some of it away to a university or make an endowment?
I don't know about, but there certainly was plenty around.
Right. But the big part, whatever he really had, most of it went to the two people that were his staff.
Yeah, the two staff members, I guess you would say one was sort of a... personal servant, and the other was a household servant.
Okay.
And, anyway, they died rich.
Yeah.
I believe it was a married couple as well.
Oh, okay.
Is my memory.
Oh, they're married. Fascinating.
Well, it wasn't a same-sex couple. It was husband and wife, which was normal.
Yeah. So, is there anything you can remember about him that probably isn't in his Wikipedia article or his standard biographies? I mean, other than he had gorgeous boyfriends or...
no, I think some of the articles, and there's definitely a very good biography out about with him, and I think they knew everything, or at least told everything that he wanted to be told.
Yeah, and probably by the time he was in his 80s, was he out or was sort of an open secret?
He was
out. Like he was out of the closet, or it was an open secret?
Well, as I said, part of his sense of humor was sort of his gayness. Uh-huh. So, you know, he outed himself.
Right,
you know.
That flamboyance.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as I said, he was not a pretty man, and he wasn't ugly, but there was just not anything really attractive about him, you know, just plain ordinary looking little Jew man.
Mm-hmm. With like a music brain the size of a planet, but otherwise like nothing you'd turn around to look at on the street.
Well, I think on the street, he was one of these celebrities that could go almost any place that he wanted to and would not be recognized.
Yeah. I bet he appreciated that.
Well, you know, there are a lot of celebrities that envy him for having that.
Yeah. So I guess that's how you got your cred at Acadia as like the professor for gay composers 101.
Yes.
Like, no, he didn't
that's
meet
right.
Mozart, but
yes. Well, the problem with it was just simply not. They talked about, for instance, there isn't a textbook any place in the world that doesn't talk about Bach having, you know, 21 children.
Yeah.
And but there wasn't until the year that I retired, and I think it was like 95, was the first year that they even mentioned in a new textbook that Aaron Copland was getting.
And it's like,
yes.
Are you headless? How did you miss that? One would have to be headless, apparently, not to have known Aaron Copland was gay.
No.
We're talking about his reputation as professor of gay composers 101 at Acadia.
Well, and Margaret, who's written a lot, did you know her at all?
No, I'd heard of her name many times.
No, because
what is wrong with you?
She really went on. She left Acadia after, you know, 20 years or more, and moved to the University of New Brunswick.
Okay.
And that's when she really started devoting herself to writing about Atlantic Canada. Mm-hmm. And that's what she became celebrated for. And she won the Order of Canada and every other order that you can think of in this country for being, you know, one of the main historians for Atlantic Canada. And she was the first person that ever mentioned in, I think, an article that she sent to me, in which she talked about there being gay people in Atlantic Canada, because it had never been done before.
Well, in that picture book that Roger has on the table over there, they mention an early Quebec example of a drummer, I guess a military drummer, that was accused of homosexuality and was pardoned if he became the executioner for New France. I'm like, well, thanks. We'll let you live, but you got to kill a pile of people.
Yes.
So.
Well, an execution, I guess, was either by pulling the latch for the dropping you.
Oh, I don't know if they had guillotines back. I mean, maybe they did. I've never heard of them in Quebec. I think it would be like with an axe.
Hanging.
Yes.
Yeah, or hanging, yeah. or firing squad.
Yes.
Depending on how how elaborate you wanted to get.
Yes.
So when Margaret wrote about it, like, what was the context for her writing about?
It was just a general history, mm-hmm. and because she wrote, I think it was for a textbook to be used in high school curriculum.
And she wanted the kids to know that they're not alone, that
right.
these people like us existed before.
She also yes. wrote a history from a woman's point of view.
Yes.
In 1700s Quebec.
No.
Yes.
But I don't doubt that it exists.
First person to write about Canadian history from a woman's point of view in 1600, 1700.
Wow. Right? That's really early.
Well.
So how was your detector test? What happened?
Oh, well, it was grueling, but it was done.
Up?
No, no more. In a manner of speaking.
Yes. How long were you there? Because